Thank you. We are here for a special hearing in the appeal from an injunction and the request for a stay in the case of National Urban League et al. Versus Ross, number 20-16868. And if I could just ask counsel, when you're not speaking, to mute your microphone. But when you are speaking, remember to unmute it so we can hear your arguments. And with that, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. Sopan Joshi on behalf of the government, appellants, defendants, and move-ins. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. We think the injunction should be stayed because plaintiffs in the district court are wrong on the merits and wrong on the equities. 2 points on the merits. First, the district court really just turned the APA on its head by ordering the agency to violate a concededly lawful, binding, and clear statutory deadline. That, to our knowledge, is unprecedented and highly extraordinary. In fact, the court made clear at a hearing that the agency can't even, quote, propose internal plans that are geared towards meeting that clear, unambiguous, lawful, and binding statutory deadline. And that brings up the second issue on the merits, which is the agency's plans, including these internal timelines and processes, are simply not final agency action under the SUA case and under standard APA principles. And this is evidenced by the fact that the agency has changed the deadlines multiple times along the way. First, they had a COVID plan, then they pulled it into September 30th, then they moved it to October 5th, which is today. And it really shouldn't be subject to judicial second-guessing and micromanagement. On the actual...
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a question about the statutory deadline, because that seems to me to be really the heart of your argument. And I want to leave aside for the moment the jurisdictional issue that you've raised or the appealability issue that you've raised about the APA. And it seems to me that in your papers, you really are not challenging the district court's findings about the what I would shorthand call the slapdash way in which the replan was put together. Rather, it seems to me that you're challenging only the remedy. And it, there, the question I have is this: if the October 31st deadline were to remain, but there were no requirement to extend beyond December 31st, how would that be legally problematic? It might be a practical impossibility, but why would it be legally impossible if only the December 31st deadline were not required to be left aside?
So two things. First of all, as you suggested, it would practically, in essence, be telling us to miss the deadline. And more important, there's really no basis to hold us in the field till October 31st, given where we are. But I want to also address...
That's not my question, though. That's not my question. I want you to assume, for the sake of this question, that the court otherwise found that the change from October 31st was arbitrary and capricious, and that that is unlikely, that finding or that conclusion is likely to be upheld.
So the only way that presumption would be met is if you thought that the agency didn't have to meet the deadline. And this goes back to the first part of your question. Let me explain. Is that neither plaintiffs nor the district court ever said or have presented anything to suggest that the agency acted unreasonably or arbitrarily given the statutory deadline. In other words, if you take as a given that the agency has to meet the binding and lawful deadline, there's nothing to suggest that we acted arbitrarily and capriciously within those grounds. The premise of the district court's finding and Your Honor's question with respect is that the agency had to consider blowing the deadline. And now if you do that...
Well, counsel, it did more than consider it. It adopted a COVID plan that clearly extended months beyond the December 31st deadline. That it's not speculative that that was the agency's previous position. And it requested an extension and then withdrew that request from Congress. So I don't understand why you think that the agency has always taken a position that that's sacrosanct. It clearly has not.
The agency's COVID plan was premised on a conditioned precedent. Congress is extending the deadline. The agency can't tell Congress what to do. Congress knows what to do. Congress is aware of the pandemic. When it became apparent in July, late July, that Congress was not going to extend the deadline, the agency had to react to it. So the agency's COVID, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. You keep using that sentence, it became apparent that Congress wasn't going to extend the deadline, but it appears that there's nothing in the record to suggest that the reason, other than the reason it didn't happen is because the request was withdrawn.
So I disagree with that. I think I would point you to Mr. Fontenot's declaration that's in the record. And I think we attached it to our stay brief. So this would be, I think, paragraph 81, addendum page 107. Mr. Fontenot makes clear that they had a plan for COVID. They were hoping that they would get the extension of the deadline. And when it became apparent in July that that wasn't going to materialize, they had... Well, you know, obviously, and this just goes to the non-final agency action point, but like, at some point, you have to make a call, right? Like, they have a lot of work to do. This is a massively complex undertaking. You've got a December deadline staring you in the face. You hope it gets moved, but at some point, you realize Congress just isn't going to act. I think Senator McConnell might have made some statement to the Times that suggested that it wasn't going to get out of a Senate committee. You know, at some point, you have to make a call.
We don't know what it did. There's nothing in the record that suggests that anything but the reason that it didn't happen is because the request was withdrawn.
Well, as I just said, the only reasons in the record we know are that the agency at some point had to start making a move and replanning things when it felt that it wasn't likely to get the extension. And that's been borne out. We still don't have an extension. And I think the agency's plans have been proven.
The record is full of statements by bureau officials that there was no way they were going to meet the deadline. That is to say, whether or not they got congressional changes, they just said, we're not going to be able to meet the deadline. And the COVID plans wanted 120 days more so they could meet a new deadline. But it's, I think, plenty of evidence in the record to show that the Bureau itself said, we're not going to meet this deadline, period.
There are statements like that when they were trying to negotiate and request a deadline from Congress.
When you say statements like that when they're trying to negotiate, are you telling me that the statements were mere bargaining positions and were not truthful?
No, they were truthful, but there are a lot of assumptions baked into them, right? And the assumptions are, if we continue...
And I would like more elucidation on this, was that you were going to follow, as I understand it, the procedures, the very complicated procedures for both the field work and the processing were worked out over a many, many year period in great detail, including backstops and checks and so on. And my understanding is that in the 2 days or 3 days that the replan was put together, a fair number of those, or some number of those backstops and checks and so on, were eliminated. So when you say, and I'd like to know specifically why, that seems useful, but the net result is that to finish it by December 31st, you're not going to do what you plan to do over many years. Is that accurate?
I don't think that's accurate. I think if you look again at Mr. Fontenot's declaration, which the district court refused to consider, but if you look at Mr. Fontenot's declaration, he explains some of the ways we got there. So, for example, for field collection in particular, right, to move from October 31st to September 30th, they got some enumerators, they made them work longer hours, they set up bonus structures and overtime so that, as he declared, the same...
They also eliminated some of the steps. That seems to be primarily what they did. In other words, they instead of knocking six times, going back six times, you're ready to go back once. Instead of you were going to use some IRS numbers instead of doing any on the ground checks and so on. And I mean, it seems to me there were a series of shortcuts that were built in which were not what the very long-term and intense planning thought was necessary.
So you are correct that some of those were elements of what's being called the replan, which I think just underscores that it's not one decision, it's many. But since the TRO, we reversed all of those steps. We went back and did six visits. And by the way, it was 6-1 only for vacant houses. So the idea is if an address is vacant, you visit it once to confirm.
I thought there were a couple different iterations of
that. There are a few others. You know, there were things like re-interviews and things like that. We went back to the original plan once the TRO was entered, and we haven't gone.
I didn't see that any place in the record. How do I know that? I mean, I believe you, but is it anywhere in the record?
So I don't think it's in, I don't think we filed that document on the appellate papers. It is in the district court docket, and I don't have the docket number, but it would have been, I suppose, maybe a day after the TRO was entered, a day or two, we filed a statement in the district court saying all the ways in which we're complying with the TRO, and it included the fact that we've gone back to six visits, we've gone back to land.
I have another question about the response to the clarification order and the sending out of the email that says we're going until October 31. There has been a great deal of confusion around the date of finalizing this phase of the census. And it seems to me that email, even though it was required by the district court, changes the calculation a bit as to reliance interests and expectations and this sort of back and forth of September 30th, October 5th, October 31st. And how do we deal with that analytically in your view?
I don't think it should play a role. It would be remarkable for a district court to order an agency to violate a lawful binding statutory deadline, then order the agency on...
No, excuse me, counsel, I'm not talking about December 31. I'm talking about the email that said, we're going to continue our process till October 31, and that's what I'd like you to address.
Yes, and what I'm saying is it would be remarkable for a court to order the agency to send out an email like that when there's no, in our view, legal basis for it, and then bootstrap that into saying, well, now it's too late because she ordered it under pain of contempt, and we're here, you know, 3 days later on appeal, it's too late. I don't think you can bootstrap in that fashion. Any confusion would have been caused by that.
I'm not saying it's too late, counsel. I'm asking you how that affects the because there's a balancing for reliance interests of people. And what I'm struggling with is how, if at all, that plays into the calculus. And you're saying it's completely irrelevant, even though the entire world has now been told that it's October 31.
Look, I don't think there should be, you know, cognizable reliance interests on a district judge's order that we're appealing. But if you're going to take into account, you know, facts on the ground, I would say take into account the fact that as of last night, we are at 99.6% households enumerated in this census as of last night. That's as good
in
as
every state. In every state, council.
That's nationwide, and we are in.
I'm asking
states.
A different question. How many states have not met the goal?
I am trying to answer. 43 states plus DC and Puerto Rico are at or above 99. Four states are at or above 98, and the remaining three are above 97 as of last night. The lowest state is Louisiana at 97.3, and they are an amici in this court telling you to stop the field operations today so that we can go to post-processing and get all the downstream things moving, and we can at least have a hope of meeting the statutory deadline. We are as good as the previous few censuses in terms of household enumeration completion, and there is no basis to second-guess the agency's judgment. Right now, the district court's injunction forces us to stay in the field.
So I'd like to ask a question.
Practical.
Judge Berzon, you've got a question. I want to interrupt you.
All right. My question is, if you were following the original protocols, which I did not realize, and if, so what is the practical effect of extending towards to October 31st? When you're finished, you're finished. Now, I think the main problem may be with self-reporters because they've now been told that they have till October 31st, so there may be more people who will come in by October 31st. Is that why? I mean, otherwise, if you're in the states that you're done, right?
No, I don't claim to understand all of it, but there's a lot of post-processing that requires all the data to be closed. There's something called geolocation, and there are things like, if you need to correct, for example, duplicate records, somebody lived in state A in March, moved in April to state B, they might have filled out two forms, or they might have incorrectly listed themselves in state B when they should have been counted in state A because that's where they were living on April 1st. Our post-processing procedures detect those, correct them, and you can't do that, I'm told, until the entire nation is closed down, all the data is in. Only then can you begin that sort of correction post-processing. That's what I'm told. And so every day that we're sitting out in the field is a day we're going to lose from post-processing and puts completion of the census by the December 31st deadline in serious, serious jeopardy.
But no, you just said serious jeopardy rather than impossibility. The Bureau people said it was impossible to be both accurate up to the standards of the Bureau and meet that December 31st deadline. They've been saying that for at least a half a year. I mean,
Certainly, but that I think those statements were predicated on business as usual and not the extraordinary measures that Mr. Fontenot details as to what they did to speed things up.
I've got another question, and that is, the record tells us that the decision to adopt the replan did not come from within the Bureau. It came from someone fairly high up within the Department of Commerce. Do we know who that person is?
I'm not sure we necessarily know. I assume it's coming from leadership, but as the Supreme Court said—
Somebody knows, but you were unwilling to tell the district court who made that direction.
So I think some of the emails suggest that the secretary made the decision, and that's entirely proper. As the Supreme Court said in Wisconsin against New York, the Secretary of Commerce is charged with administering the census, and the fact that he overrules his subordinates is of no moment. And I think that principle holds here. If I might reserve for rebuttal.
Yes, you may. Thank you. And we'll hear from the other side.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I want to start with the question, Judge Fletcher, that you asked about the balance between accuracy and the deadline. During the entire presentation, there was no discussion of the constitutional requirement that they produce on December 30th. They produce not just a report, but one that actually represents a complete and accurate census. And so to go back to where Mr. Joshi started in terms of what the district court actually ordered, they act as if the court ordered them to violate the law, but in arguing that, forget that the law also includes a requirement that is both statutory and constitutional to produce an accurate and complete count. And what the district court—
But counsel, as far as I can tell, there is neither a constitutional nor a statutory statement of exactly what that means, whether it means 99.2% or an average of 99.6 or at least 98.8 in every state, or those are not specified statutory requirements, are they?
They are not, but the court didn't.
Accuracy is a judgment call. It's somewhat amorphous, is it not? As distinct from the deadline, which is specified.
So I think 2 points on that. One is the fact that it doesn't specify the level of accuracy in the statute doesn't mean that an accuracy requirement does not exist. And I don't take the other side to dispute the fact that there is a duty to complete an accurate census. We could talk about what that means, but all the district court held was that that was something that the agency had to consider and had to sufficiently consider in deciding it was going to cut the timeline in half to meet this internal reporting deadline. That is the basis for the district court's decision. They like to make it seem like the district court created some sort of free-floating accuracy requirement. All the district court did was look at the administrative record and look at the multiple coercive statements by Bureau officials saying, we know we have this obligation for accuracy. We cannot meet that obligation, however you want to define it. We cannot meet it.
We're now being told that our on-the-ground number as to what has actually been accomplished as of today. We're just told, and I have no idea whether it's true, that those numbers comport with, as to the field operation, what has been done last several censuses. I don't know really that, though. I don't think correctly, but and in other words, what we had before were projections. Now we have actual on the ground numbers as to this part of it. Okay. And the question is, what can we do now that says that there is currently, at this stage, for this stage, an accuracy problem?
So a few responses to that, if I could try to get through them. I think the first point is, when you're talking about an EPA claim, what happens after the fact doesn't speak to what was before the agency at the time. The second point I would
there's a little bit of a glitch on your sound here. I didn't quite hear what you said.
Oh, apologies. What I was saying is, for an APA claim, whatever happened after the fact doesn't speak to what was before the agency at the time it made its decision on August 3rd to pull back the dates. And if you look back,
no, but it's relevant to the stay question.
It is, and so I'm happy to address it directly. I would say that the numbers that they are giving you do not show the same level of accuracy in prior censuses by any means. And so let's start with September 30, the date that field operations were supposed to end under the replan. On September 30th, there were 16 states and the District of Columbia that had not reached 99%, 16 states. Even today, they say, and the latest numbers I had nine states that had not met 99%. And remember, the Bureau's own statement of what is required for accuracy was that every single state hit 99%. That's exactly what happened in 2010. And then I want to talk a moment.
Suppose we were to die this day, and October 10th, they come in and say, okay, now all states are 99%. We stop then?
No.
In other words, they still have to keep going to October 31st.
So I think the 99%, what they have done in past censuses, and if you want to look back to the COVID plan, what they were planning to do with the COVID plan was they don't just stop counting at 99%. 99% still leaves a significant number of households uncounted. The COVID plan said they were going to keep counting until they got to, they weren't going to close out until they hit 100% or hit the relevant deadline. And if they needed to extend it, they would do that to get to the 100%.
Let me ask you a question about that interim deadline question. Let's say that the stay is granted with respect to October 31st, continuing the on-the-ground operations to continue counting people until October 31st. What difference does it make in terms of the accuracy question, whether there is also a necessity to blow the December 31st? In other words, suppose they are able to get, you know, 24 hours at a whole bunch more computers than they now have, and they can make it by December 31st to massage the data that they get by October 31st. Why would that be a problem from your perspective? In other words, I don't really understand the relevance of requiring them to ignore the December 31st as a goal, if they can do it.
So I think two points on that. I think the one thing I would point out is that data processing is really important. Under the COVID-19 plan, they had given themselves 6 months to do data processing. under the replan, they're already down to 3 months. It is an extremely complicated process that has to be done sequentially.
But that's a practical question. That's not really a legal question. If they're required to keep doing the on-the-ground work and then do the data processing afterwards, why do we need to mess with what the endpoint is of that?
I think as a practical matter, you are right. And I think it goes to a larger point, which is when they focus on violating the statutory deadline, that deadline is still several months away. Congress can still act. When they decided in August to change the timelines, that deadline was 5 months away. And I think, as your honors pointed out, the suggestion that all of a sudden they realized that Congress was not going to act, or the suggestion that the COVID-19 plan was at all contingent in any relevant respect on Congress acting, is contrary to the evidence in the record. When they adopted this COVID-19 plan and they adopted the timelines, they like to call them target dates now. They were not target dates, they were deadlines. They told everyone in the field, they told the entire public, you have until October 31st to respond to the census. They
but
went
in
out
terms of, and in terms of the injunction and the stay of the injunction, again, as you say, the deadline is close to 3 months away. So there doesn't seem to be an emergency of any kind or irreparable harm with regard to it, really, on either side, in the sense that what will happen, and this case is going to go to a merits panel on the preliminary injunction. But the continued existence of the injunction enjoining the December 31st deadline doesn't seem to be necessary either to your irreparable harm or from the government's point of view, really on the stay, necessary to their irreparable harm in the sense that there is time to deal with that, both as a practical matter on the ground, maybe it will work, or as a practical matter on the ground, maybe they can go to Congress now. Or when it is apparent that they cannot do it, or as a practical matter with regard to the court, because we're going to hear the case on the merits of the injunction before that. So why should we, on the stay, why shouldn't we on the stay enjoin at least that part of or stay at least that part of the injunction as unnecessary to meet your irreparable harm?
I guess because I think the two are linked together, and this may be one of the rare areas where both sides agree to some extent. I mean, the government is on record now. I mean, they were on record nearly a year ago saying we can't meet the deadline. They're on record now saying if we're in the field a day past September 30th, we can't meet the deadline. They're now also on record saying if we're in the field a day past today, we can't.
But there's no urgency. What's the urgency with regard to enjoining that deadline?
I mean, I think they would say the urgency is the two are not completely separate from one another, that it's a sequential process and that they have to start.
I'm positing that the possibility that we stay only that.
I understand, I guess.
Not the October 31st deadline, but we just keep hands off the December 31st deadline.
And I think I would suggest that, as I understand it, they have to start data processing on November 1st. And so maybe there's time between now and then, but the processing part of it is sequential and they give themselves a certain number of days to do the different parts of that post-processing process. And so
it's
I
changed everything else. I mean,
counsel,
isn't there a difference between the agency's own practical needs and a court telling the agency to ignore a statutory deadline? In other words, it may be, as a practical matter, impossible, but it strikes me as legally different to have a court order that. I don't know if I'm making my point clear, but if there's no endpoint deadline, if there's only the October 31st date, then it's up to the agency. They can meet it if they turn the world upside down. They can ask for more time from Congress, or they can do what's been done in the past by other agencies and other censuses, which is to miss the deadline and seek approval afterwards. There are many, many options, but there, it seems to me, not for the court to say what those are, and it doesn't really change what will happen, does it? Other than in this theoretical way.
Well, I think only in the sense that accuracy matters. And so the notion that they would even try to compress data processing further from 6 months to 3 months to 2 months is extremely troubling in and of itself. And it's that.
But of course, the other difference is that the on the ground field operation, once it stops, everybody seems to agree it can't be. Can't be redone. If you're manipulating, if you're calculating and you make a mistake, you can fix it. Right? In other words, that's not unfixable in the same way. Even if it turns out they have some major glitch, they can turn around after the fact and say, you know, we had a major glitch. That number's no good. You have to give us a chance to fix it. It's not the same thing. It's not something that can't be repaired.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I think, you know, it goes to the irreparable harm point that we made, which is if you stay the relief in its entirety, they're shutting down immediately. They're firing hundreds of thousands of enumerators, and that's something that you really practically can't go back from. They're effectively trying to get their merits relief on a stay. So I do agree with that. I think in terms of the district court's decision, if we want to talk about remedy, I mean, I think on the merits, the record in this case is as clear as it can be. In the district court, the government said that the documents speak for themselves, and I think they most certainly do. But focusing on the remedial point, I mean, really the remedy that the court granted here is no different than the remedy that the Supreme Court granted in the Regents case in DACA.
Counsel, can I interrupt? I want to come back to what's been bothering all three of us. And that is this December 31st deadline that appears to be ordered. I have trouble understanding why your clients care. I understand exactly why they care about the data collection deadline, but I have trouble understanding why they care so much about that it be in an order that the processing be finished by the 31st, because it's clearly your client's position that they want an accurate census. And if it turns out that the Census Bureau can be both accurate as to data collection by collecting it through the end of October and accurate as to processing by doing it by December 31st, well, so much the better. But if they cannot be accurate with respect to the processing, I should think it would be in your client's interest to allow the Bureau to do what it thinks it needs to do to process that data when it's closed the data collection process period, data collection period at October 31st. So I have trouble why you are insisting that you want the December 31st date.
It's because everything in the record shows that they cannot get the data processing done in time and come up with accurate results. And if I could just take a minute.
No, but that's exactly my point. So if it shows that they cannot finish the data processing accurately by December 31st, why are you insisting that they do that?
Oh, sorry. We're not insisting that they do that by any means. We think they should take the time that they've provided.
But you've got a district court order that appears to order them to finish the processing by the December 31st. And the question we have right now is whether or not we should give a temporary.
No, it's actually it's the opposite of that. It forbids them from meeting the December 31st, even if they can.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, right.
And so the articulation, I mean, if you look at the district court's clarification order, and it's in our supplemental appendix at page 4, it explains the relief that the district court granted. What it did was vacate the timeline in the replan, which by matter of law reinstituted the timeline that was in the COVID-19 plan until the agency corrects the legal defects that she identified.
That's another reason why it would seem on the stay that it may make sense to stay that deadline, because it's contingent. It's in the sense, as I understand it, if they next week came up with a comprehensive explanation of why they did what they did and why their timeline makes sense and why they can finish it by December 31st accurately, then the injunction wouldn't even preclude them. Is that right? Because essentially what she's saying is go back to the agency and give us an explanation of what you did and why you did it and why it works.
I think that's right. I guess my concern here, and I don't want to overstate it because obviously keeping them in the field right now is the most important thing. But my concern is that the defendant's position in this case has shifted dramatically over time. I mean, if you look at our supplemental addendum, and I know the defendants like to pretend that all of the statements saying we can't do it happened before the replan, and that suddenly in 4 or 5 days they found a way to cut the time in half and do everything accurately. But if you look at our supplemental addendum, 4 months they were saying we can't get it done by the statutory deadline, we can't produce an accurate
count. And then something will happen. I mean, but the real question is whether the court should be in the middle of that now, 3 months early. If they can't do it, they won't. And they either will go to Congress, or as Judge Graber said, or they will blow the deadline, or they will do part of it. That's all quite contingent at this point.
And I guess the other thing I would, you know, to go back to in terms of case law, I do think the Regents case, the remedy here that the district court granted is on all fours with that case. I mean, in some ways, it really is. Sorry, the Regents case, the DACA decision. In Regents, what the Supreme Court did was it affirmed the remedy granted by the district court, which was to vacate the DACA rescission, which reinstated the DACA plan. This is the plan that the Attorney General had said was illegal. And so it's comparable in that respect.
Well, counsel, that's sort of the norm in an APA case. If there are a series of rules and you vacate the last one, the previous one ordinarily goes into effect. But there is a countervailing consideration here, potentially, about the separation of powers question, where Congress has told the agency do this by a certain date. And that seems to me different from the DACA case, which didn't involve that kind of timeline problem.
Well, I think two things. One is, I don't know that a statutory deadline is any different than any other statutory command. And the argument in the DACA case was that DACA violated the statute and also a constitution. And so I'm not sure that there's a difference between a timeline and a different provision. But I think the other thing I would say is that the COVID-19 plan that goes back into effect, and you're absolutely right, this is the traditional remedy, the COVID-19 plan extended the deadlines. And I know they like to say it's contingent on Congress acting, but they were implementing it 4 months with those extended deadlines in place. They were telling everyone that these were the deadlines, that this is exactly what they were going
for. But also it's just a deadline, right? So if they had got under the COVID plan, they could have gotten it done by December 31st, right? They said, in other words, it's a deadline. You can beat a deadline, right? So it wasn't built in that they were going to violate the December 31st. They said they weren't going to be able to do it, but it was still just a deadline.
That is theoretically true, but as a practical matter, there is a reason why everyone who looked at this was saying you can't do it. I mean, and I realize my time is up. If I could just end, I mean, we are in the middle of a global pandemic. The census is a very hard thing to do in the best of times. Of course, in April, when they were faced with this, after spending a decade of planning, coming up with the operation, and a month trying to figure out what to do in the face of the pandemic, they realized they needed more time. They didn't change the operations. I mean, again, this is everything is tested, it's retested, it's planned out. They kept the exact same operations in place. All they did was move the deadlines. And then
I have one other question. Was Mr. Joshi correct when he said that the current record is that they eliminated all their shortcuts and went back to the original procedures?
The record is not clear on that, and I actually am glad you gave me the opportunity, because I think that is a real concern with the 99% figures that they like to use. It only means something if the metrics are the same. And there is no question that the replan changed the metrics. It changed how often they go to administrative records. It changed how often they go to proxies. It changes how
They changed all that. I didn't see that in the record, but that's what he says.
It is not. Well, what is in the record is that during the pendency of the TRO, they went back. So that's between September 5th and September 24th. What the record says nothing about is what they did before that date, or importantly, what they've done after that date. So what they've done since September 24th. And we said this in our opposition in this court. We pointed out that they're using different metrics than they planned in the 2018 operational plan and different metrics that they had used in previous censuses. And at least in the reply, there's nothing in there denying what we pointed out. And we think that is really critical, because if you're going to look at the 99%, which I think is, you know, even if you take it at face value, it's nothing like prior censuses. It's nothing like what they committed to do this year. But if you are going to look at that, the metrics matter.
But doesn't that cut in a weird direction? Because if you would tell October 31st, they still don't know what they're going to do until October 31st. They can still do it the same way they've been doing it, whatever that is.
Theoretically, yes, but I mean, the entire reason they gave themselves more time in the COVID-19 plan was so they didn't have to change what they had planned to do when they adopted this decade-long plan. They had came up with very specific rates, how many times they're going to the houses, when they're going to look at administrative records. I mean, all of this is very detailed in the operational plan. And the only reason they cut back on it with the replan was because they had cut an entire month off of their schedule. So, of course, something had to give, and what gave were these quality control.
But the injunction really only goes to the timing. It doesn't say, maybe it should have said, but I don't think it says, that in restoring the COVID-16 deadlines, you have to go restore the COVID-16 procedures.
Well, that is true. And I think I bring it up because they like to point to the 99% and say everything's going wonderfully on the ground and we're almost done. And so there's no need to extend it. But I think one of the questions is, okay, so how are you getting to 99%? And they said here today for the first time that they're still following what the TRO said and they're still using the COVID-19 plan metrics, but I also didn't see anything in the record to that effect.
Thank you, counsel. You've exceeded your time by quite a bit, and we'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Joshi.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate that. I do want to say that just as a factual matter, we haven't gone back to the, since the TROs ended and the PI was entered, we haven't gone back to the other metrics. I also want to just clarify, as a factual matter, you know, when you visit houses, it's like up to 6 times. But the point is, once you get a response from the house, you don't keep going back. That's under the normal plan too. So I can assure you that the metrics, the way we're calculating these 99% numbers, et cetera, is exactly the same way we've always calculated it. That's what I have been informed. I specifically asked that question of the agency and they told me, yes, they are calculating it the same way. There were a lot of questions about whether you could keep the October 31st deadline part of the injunction and vacate all the rest. I think that's going to be really problematic for a couple of reasons. First, as a practical matter,
Can I interrupt for just a minute? We're just being asked to stay. We're not being asked to vacate. We're not a merits panel. So the only thing we're doing is staying pending appeal.
I apologize for the misstatement. Yes. To the extent the panel is considering staying everything except the October 31st deadline, you know, to stay in the field part of the injunction, I don't think that would work because...
Counsel, I think you misunderstand, at least on my part, what the question was. If the only thing stayed is the December 31st date, everything else would be the COVID-19 plan.
Yeah,
I think you reversed the question.
So, but let me try this again. If we are forced by whatever procedural means to stay in the field through October 31st, that would impose irreparable harm on us because it would make it impossible to meet the December 31st deadline that Congress has set. And the fact that we were all having a lot of conversations about percentages and follow-up visits and you know, all of these details, I think just drives home the point that Congress has made a judgment. There's always a trade-off between speed and accuracy, and Congress in the statute has said, you have 9 months, do the best you can. The Bureau is saying...
But what we're letting go of here is that there's a... I mean, I've been thinking that there is some sort... Well, the president actually said in April, there is simply no way we can do this. It's an act of God, and we can't be expected to do it. And you're leaving out the fact that completely unpredictably, for what, 8 weeks, nothing was done because of an international pandemic and safety issues. And the safety issues are obviously not cured, as we can tell by the fact that the president is in the hospital, in terms of the people who are trying to get all this done. So the fact is that whatever schedule is in the statute, it obviously didn't contemplate this. Now, that isn't to say that we should enjoy this deadline, but it's to say that everybody has to be cautious and realistic here. And the notion that Congress really meant that you have to do it in 9 months, even though there's an international pandemic and people are dying and nobody wants to go house to house and people and so on, as was recognized by the COVID plan, seems to me to be an assumption that isn't necessarily merited. I mean, you've completely left that out of your whole discussion.
Look, I appreciate that you or I, or maybe many people might think that we should take more than 9 months to do the census, but Congress is the one entrusted
to do the
with
census
that judgment.
When there's essentially a force majeure, which nobody could have predicted.
Yeah, there's no force majeure clause in the Constitution.
Well,
the Constitution,
but there's implicit, I believe there's an implicit one, actually.
Well, the Constitution grants Congress the discretion, and the Supreme Court has said this, to conduct the census as it may determine.
And it could be that Congress wants to say, sensibly wants to say, well, let's see if you can do it. And if you come to us in November and you say, or December 1st, and say, you know what, we've tried, we can't do it, that's a different story than projecting it out 9 months in advance.
It would be remarkable to call it arbitrary and capricious, because an agency is, you know, depending on a change in the law. The fact is, under the constraints of the law as it is today, no one has said that we acted arbitrary and capriciously within the statutory framework, right? All the judge said was that we should have considered going outside of the statutory framework so we could get a better census in light of conditions.
That's not all she said. And the problem, of course, here is that this was a very strange operation, because on January 29th, everybody inside the Bureau was saying we can't get it done. And then some, you know, deus ex machina comes in from outside and says, well, you're going to come up with a plan. And in 3-4 days, 10 months worth of, or 10 years worth of planning is thrown out the door, and they change everything and say, okay, maybe we can do it after all. So, and 6 months turns into 3 months in 3 days and so on. It's not a usual way to make
decisions. A couple things. It was actually 5 months that turned into 3 months, not mm-hmm. six. But also, the agency asked for $500 million that they're paying enumerators. And so, as we have in the record, the number of hours in the field matches what would have been the hours in the field under
and
the
I
COVID
actually didn't
plan.
See that. I tried to erase.
I'm sorry. I believe that is in paragraph 86. I might have that wrong of the declaration. That would be at addendum page 108. I'm sorry. I apologize. Addendum page 110, paragraph 86 of Mr. Fontenot's declaration. Now, look, the bottom line is that, for better or worse, Congress sets the deadline. In 1930 and 40 and 50, they told the Bureau to spend only 2 weeks enumerating, right? Like, Congress gets to decide these things. Congress has said, get it done by the 31st. In the Bureau's expert judgment, if we're to have a hope of getting there, we need to get out of the field today. And I don't think it's your place, my place, anyone else's place to second guess that judgment, and there's nothing in the record to second guess that judgment. The fact is, today, Mr. Fontenot is saying in a sworn declaration that if we get out of the field today, we believe that we can meet the statutory deadline for at least the residence criteria, it's called, to get a set of numbers to the president. We can partially implement the presidential memorandum that's been enjoined in other litigation, but The point is, we believe we can meet the December 31st deadline if we get immediate relief. And the only thing I will ask this panel is that we would need that relief today. But if you disagreed with everything I said here today, I would just ask that you issue that decision as promptly as possible so that we have at least some time to go to the Supreme Court and try to get relief there. But of course, we think you should stay the whole injunction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments that both of you have given us on such short notice. And the case just argued is submitted for decision, and we are adjourned.
This court for this session stands adjourned.